You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Hi, folks. Be sure to visit my webpage at dr-history.com for over 440 true stories of the Old West. Also, now available on Amazon, my first book, a historical fiction based on true events entitled Coal Miner to Cowboy. The story of a young man born in England in 1850. He wants to be a cowboy and makes his way to America, travels from New Orleans to Independence on a steamboat, hires on as a teamster to Santa Fe, then on a cattle drive to Bozeman, Montana. He also rides shotgun on a stagecoach. He travels with a wagon train, and on his two-year journey, he meets some famous people and keeps a journal of his adventures. The book contains a lot of the true stories from my podcast and is now available on Amazon. Visit my webpage for a link to Amazon for the book, Coal Miner to Cowboy.
Dr. History, good morning.
Good morning, Zeb.
How are you?
It's fun to watch you.
Why? What did I do?
Thumbing through papers.
I feel like a monkey in a zoo.
Yes. So we are going to continue our theme of Western movies.
Love it.
And so, you know, we've talked about the different guys, Hoot Gibson, yeah. Tom Mix, yeah. Those guys. You know, Mix kind of turned the simple cowboy into a hero who was largely than life for a lot of generations of kids, you know, youngsters. Yeah. And he actually appeared in more than 300 motion pictures of his own. Now, that's cranking them out.
Tom Mix,
yeah. But, you know, there were a few movie studios that did not crank out the B-Westerns, or they actually called them opera movies at one point.
Horse operas?
Horse operas. Yeah. Because they were kind of tuned towards the youth, the kids. But
the Saturday morning type.
Yeah, the Saturday morning.
Yeah.
And so a lot of them didn't really want to put a bunch of money into something that was going to cost them a lot more and not sure whether they'd make their money back.
Yeah.
So, but for all the profits they made from these cheap horse operas, the studios were only now and then willing to risk big budgets or big stars on first-class Westerns, with a few worthy exceptions. Westerns of the 1920s and 30s were mostly, as I said, potboilers for the Saturday matinee audience. Mm-hmm. And I can remember going to Saturday afternoon movies, you know.
Absolutely.
So there's only one major star of this period that could move freely between the Westerns and the more complex adult-type movies.
Yeah.
And that's a tall Montana named Frank J. Cooper. Gary Cooper. So he was Paramount's top male box office.
What year was that?
In the 1920s and 30s. I'm not sure when he first started.
I was just curious.
I'm going to say 19. Oh, wait a minute. Down here. Yeah. He started as a stuntman in 1925.
25.
Yeah. So, you know, he was their top male box office attraction. He appeared in a lot of Westerns, far more than any other actors at that time. Cooper was kind of a likable guy when playing, but he was flexible. He could play a foreign legionnaire, a flying ace,
yeah.
A doughboy, an artist. But they described him as kind of a lanky grace that kind of gave him an instant authority when he was sitting on a saddle. He just kind of fit the role,
well,
I guess.
What did he do prior to getting in the films?
Well, he was born. We'll go on here. He was born and grew up in Montana,
yeah.
And worked as a ranch hand before drifting into films.
Oh, he was.
So he was a ranch hand, yeah.
Yeah.
So he knew how to ride a horse. But at the suggestion of some ranch friends he met during a visit to Los Angeles as an extra and stuntman in 1925.
I'll be darned.
That's kind of when he started.
Yeah.
But Cooper was no ordinary Hollywood cowboy. His father was a British-trained barrister and gentleman rancher who served as a justice of the Montana Supreme Court. Young Cooper had attended an English public school before college and had planned on a career as a cartoonist. Can you believe that?
Are you serious?
He wanted to be a cartoonist.
I'll be.
So, but motion picture success, Cooper was given a featured part in one called The Winning of Barbara North. And I've got to say, I've never heard of that one. After a little more than a year as a mounted extra, and he made such an impression on the audiences that Paramount offered him a contract and was soon casting him as the leading man.
Mm-hmm.
And he made his debut in Sound Pictures, the talkies, in the title role of the Virginian.
Oh, I remember that.
Okay, yeah. So that's the first talking movie that he did.
Yeah.
So the book, The Virginian, had been twice dramatized in silent movies,
mm-hmm.
but this third version, one of the first Western talkies, was such a success that it was re-released 6 years later by popular demand.
Right.
And Cooper, they described him, you know, he's this soft-spoken, honorable cowhand. His on-screen persona made him, for millions, the definitive Westerner of film. He was the man.
He, you know? Some of his movies were, in my opinion, almost classics.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And one movie, and I can't think of the name of the movie, but where they had to ride a very narrow, about 18-inch trail back. Did you ever see that movie?
I don't remember that.
And the Indians were chasing them and everything. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. And they were about 450 feet up in the air. Oh, my.
Well, so he crossed and recrossed between cowboy roles and other parts, like I said, flying ace or whatever.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
But a Western star almost never appeared in anything but Westerns, most of them. The first crop of these post-mix heroes like Ken Maynard, Buck Jones, Tim McCoy,
oh, yeah.
they worked year after year exclusively in Westerns.
Yep.
They didn't go back and forth. But like Mix, they were fine athletes and usually did their own stunts. Most of them had worked in rodeo or in Wild West shows. Later, B-picture Western stars like Gene Autry, Roy Rogers, William Boyd had to be taught to ride a horse and use doubles. And that kind of ruined it for me.
Well,
I thought Roy was just a natural, you know, cowboy, but he had to be taught how to ride a horse.
He
and Gene Autry.
He was not exactly from the cowboy capital of the world.
Okay.
His hometown was not known to be cowboy.
And they had used doubles, you know, filmed at long range so they wouldn't get too much of a close-up to realize it wasn't really him.
Yeah.
You know, but Gene Autry's box office success kept Republic Pictures solvent through the late 1930s, just like Mix had done for Fox Studios in the 1920s.
But in fairness, though, Doctor, you got to also say that Roy Rogers and the others, they did learn and became very proficient
right.
with handling a horse.
They did. They did. They learned how to do it.
Yeah.
But, you know, the fans expected death-defying deeds from these cowboys and an ability to subdue the most vicious villain, you know.
Yeah.
They also came to assume, thanks to Mix, that Western heroes would obey codes of behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most movie cowboys were bashful in the presence of women, young and old, and while they sometimes kissed the heroine, they usually had to be nudged into it by their horse and seen bent after freeing themselves on a shot of sarsaparilla or a glass of fresh buttermilk.
Yeah, right.
As an antidote for shaken nerves.
Yeah, right. Enter William Boyd.
Oh, we're gonna continue that line right here. So Tom Mix, he'd cleansed the cowboy of any hint of original sin and had made it to pay at the box office.
Who wrote that stuff?
Studios seldom laid down rules of behavior as specific. However, as the Fox Film Corporation in 1919, for Buck Jones, they issued the following instructions. Here's their instructions. You're going to like this. Please give painstaking attention to the following. Your hair must always be neatly combed unless you are in a fight. Have it cut, washed, and oiled once a week to give it proper gloss.
Really?
Number two, your teeth require polishing and cleaning by a dentist once every 2 months and careful attention daily. Open your mouth a little wider when you smile so that your teeth are seen more.
Uh-huh.
Number three.
Uh-huh.
The new suits of clothes, shirts, and collars you are having made should be worn so that you will get in practice of wearing those kind of clothes and will not appear strange in them before the camera. In other words, they wanted to wear their costumes all the time.
Yeah.
Number four, You should give attention to your fingernails so they are clipped not too close and always clean. Those were his instructions.
Okay.
As Zeb looks at his fingernails.
Yeah, and this was Buck Jones.
Yes.
Okay.
So the Cowboys' morals received similar attention. Gene Autry, with the approval of the industry, issued his colleagues a set of commandments that, had they been enforced in the old frontier, would have probably stopped the westward expansion at the Mississippi.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So here they are. Quote, "The cowboy, by these mandates, did not take unfair advantage of an enemy, never went back on his word, always told the truth, lifted neither voice nor hand to children, old folks, or animals, hated intolerance of a racial or religious nature, helped all in distress, worked hard, respected women, parenthood, and the law, was pure in thought, word, and deed, did not smoke or drink, and was true in all circumstances to the red, white, and blue."
There you go.
Excuse me.
It sounds to me like these were the Hollywood film studios.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Mix, you know, and his imitators, they abide by kind of a certain philosophical absolutes that had been observed by, you know, Griffith and Bronco Billy and William S. Hart.
Good old
and,
Bronco Billy.
Yeah, so their horse operas told the audiences about the West and Westerners, that the land was awesome and its conquerors a superior race of men, and it was no place for weakness or indecision. A Western hero, whether Gibson or Accord or Hart or Mix, he would leap on his trusty horse and acted. He actually had to act. And the message was one of hope. The cavalry would always arrive in time.
But you know something? Those were days, even if they came out with those rules and everything else, those were good days because they were portraying an image of good.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
William S. Boyd, do you know about him?
No.
Oh, they had to keep him under lock and key.
Oh, yeah.
When he was off the screen as being Hopalong Cassidy, he terrorized a lot of bottles.
Well, and that may be true of a few of the others.
Yeah, it might be true.
It could be.
Yeah.
So you've heard the term epic.
Yeah.
Okay. The term epic, as applied to Westerns, is said to have been coined in 1922 by a guy named Jesse Lasky, vice president of Paramount Studios. And he was trying to justify spending the horrendous amount of $500,000. This is 1922.
Yeah.
To film a movie called The Covered Wagon.
Uh-huh.
Okay. The company's president, a guy named Zucker, telephoned Lasky from New York to ask him if he had not misplaced a decimal point. "No," he said, "it will cost $500,000. And Westerns seemed to be going out of style, and he was not inclined to invest so much money in one. But this," said Lasky desperately, "is more than a Western. It is an epic. You can afford this." So this guy said, "An epic, huh? Well, in that case, go ahead."
For $500,000.
For $500,000. Well, The Covered Wagon cost $750,000,
$750,000,
as things turned out, seven times the budget of an ordinary fast-action horse opera. You know, we talked about some that they made for like $10,000,
yeah.
$20,000.
Can you imagine what that would be today?
Oh, yeah. But this first Western epic dramatized the triumphs and the tribulations of westbound Americans on a scale audience has never seen before.
Who starred in that?
Let me see here. Let's keep going.
Okay.
Maybe we'll get it. Its director was a guy named James Cruz. And here's what he did. He searched all over the West before deciding on 200,000 acres in Nevada's Snake Valley as his location. Now, I'm not sure exactly where that is.
I think it's down by Tonopah, I think.
Is it? Okay. So he hired 1,000 extras, hundreds of technicians, a herd of buffalo, 750 Indians. He assigned 8 big trucks to the task of bringing food and supplies to the tent city that he'd built to house the laborers and the cast. And he borrowed, leased, or built 500 covered wagons.
Holy
he had a
cow.
Caravan 3 miles long, and he secured the animals needed to haul them across the rough terrain.
Wow.
That's a lot, you know. his Hollywood pioneers found themselves coping with a lot of the hardships and difficulties that real pioneers had experienced 80 years before. Their wagon train, just imagine sitting out there in that desert, Zeb. They had the wind, the dust, the heat, high water, and at one point, a genuine blizzard, which was written into the script.
Mm-hmm.
So they were out there just like the old pioneers, in a way.
And loving it.
And loving every minute. So the covered wagon was a tremendous success. It prompted a revival in the kind of declining Western genre. But the film itself was of limited artistic value. Many of the action sequences lacked the excitement that is kind of the Western stock in trade. The Western epic attained its full stature a year later in the hands of a guy by the name of John Ford.
There we go.
Here we go. He's the man.
He's the great one.
He's the director. Yep. He's pretty famous in that whole genre,
oh,
right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So Ford guided Hoot Gibson through some of the ex-rodeo star's early short movies. Ford proved himself before a wider audience and became one of Hollywood's leading filmmakers with one called The Iron Horse.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And this was an epic based on construction of the first transcontinental railroad and the Fox Film Corporation's answer to the covered wagon.
Right.
Of course, this was the train. So he persuaded the Central Pacific Railroad to lend him Jupiter, a locomotive that had been used in laying its original track.
Wow.
And he also got the Union Pacific to oblige with another engine simply known as Old 119.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two actual train engines. He hired 5,000 extras. Now, can you imagine directing 5,000 people?
No, and I've been in six motion pictures.
Uh-huh.
And the director, you can see why these people, a lot of them are bald.
Okay.
Tear your hair out.
Well, he had 5,000. He included a complete regiment of U.S. cavalry, 1,000 Chinese construction hands, 800 Indians. He installed 100 cooks to feed them, had 2,800 horses, 1,300 buffalo, and 10,000 head of cattle delivered to this place out there in the desert. So Ford put his faith in a tried and true plot. Rather than go with history and striving for the audience's attention, his picture turned on the hero's efforts to revenge himself of his father's murder. The Iron Horse gave audiences a sense of movement and action that the Covered Wagon movie didn't have. And though the Covered Wagon was had a place in history, the Iron Horse had proved much more influential. So
we've got a quick call. Can you take a call?
Sure.
Caller, good morning. You're on the air real fast. Go.
Sorry for the interruption. What year was this?
About 1926.
Thank you.
All right, Earl, thank you. Go ahead.
So Ford made Westerns in 1926, and then he quit for 13 years. But there's another movie called Stagecoach that I know we're about out of time, so I want to get to this one part. Where the actor really had to...
Well, while you're stumbling for that, let me say that John Ford created and really made the name of John Wayne.
Exactly, and we will get to that. But yep. So Stagecoach is where he made his return, has come to be widely regarded as the standard against which all other Westerns must be measured.
Yep.
The story was scarcely original, even in 1939. It recounts the trials of a desperate group of people traveling on a stagecoach under threat of Indian attack. The passengers are Hollywood's predictable representatives of virtue and villainy. You had on the stagecoach, you had the unjustly imprisoned fugitive bent on avenging his father's murder. You had the respectable banker. You had the southern gentlewoman. You had the chivalrous gambler. You had the nervous whiskey drummer, the alcoholic doctor, and the comical driver.
There you go. You got it all.
That's all you had to have.
You got it all.
But the picture is distinguished by one of the most spectacular chase sequences ever filmed by out in Utah, which Ford used as a location for the first time in the movie Stagecoach. And he went to use that time and time again, and that's where the Western imagery of Hollywood became.
Yep.
But Stagecoach may be best remembered as the film that rescued an actor named John Wayne.
John Wayne.
From the world of B pictures, and in time made him more than anyone since Tom Mix, even more than Gary Cooper.
I believe
Hollywood's embodiment of the Western hero.
I believe the first motion picture, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, that got John Wayne out of those little serial type movies, the black and whites, you know, into something really big. I believe the first one was Hondo.
Yes, I believe you're right.
Yeah.
Now, Zeb, I've got a discrepancy here in my script about him. They say that he picked up the name Duke from a part he drafted to play in a high school melodrama. Now, you told me something different last week.
The white horse that he used in the grade B westerns, you know, those serial type things.
Right.
He rode a white horse that was named Duke. Now, in the book, John Wayne, autobiography, etc., they mention this on two or three different occasions. So I guess I'm going to go with what the family has said about the origination of the name.
Yeah, when I read this in here, I thought, oh, that's not what Zeb told me. And
well, don't take everything I say as gospel.
Well, I do, Zeb. You're the
go to the side of the hill, come down carrying two tablets of stone, and
and you're the man. So that's kind of where we're going to stop today. There's more things about John Wayne that I want to talk about at some point.
Oh, what an amazing person!
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
I mean,
you know, he was the American, the God Bless America, the red, white, and blue.
Well,
a
lot of people don't realize he had not only a movie acting career, but he was involved in ranching. He was involved in all kinds of different activities, but also recording of record albums.
Okay, now I didn't know about you mean singing.
Yeah, not singing, but it was the narration type style.
Oh, okay.
And he had that album called America, Why I Love Her.
Okay, I think I have heard that.
I've got it upstairs.
And he was in that one movie, I can't remember what it's called, over in Ireland.
Yeah, The Quiet Man.
Yeah. So not just westerns, you know. So
and then of course all of his war movies too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What an amazing guy.
I got to run.
I know.